Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Wednesday the 27th of March. Today I'm joined by Duncan Balkan, who is a Watson's Daily Ambassador. Hey there Duncan, how are you doing today?
Hi Peter, I'm very well thanks, how are you?
I'm very, very good, thank you. It is funny, I found that when you are on this podcast, which is a lot, right?
It is quite a lot.
For some reason, right at the beginning, you sound like you're in a massive cave. You know, it's like echoes, and then suddenly it's okay again. I noticed it yesterday. So, I'll just reassure the listeners, right, that in fact, you don't live in a cave.
I live in quite a modest two-bedroom flat, so I don't know where the cavernous noise is coming from.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. But anyway, so I don't know, because it never comes across here when we're talking now like this. Yeah. But for some reason, when I play the recording back, it does sound, I don't know why. And yeah, anyway, never mind. Right, so today, which story did you pick out from today's Watson's Daily?
Yeah, so I picked out a story from the Wall Street Journal about the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Anyone that's been living under a rock for the last 24 hours might not have seen this. Most of the people are probably aware that a bridge, Francis Scott Key Bridge, just south of the port of Baltimore, was struck by a freight containing boat yesterday. So before I go any further, it goes without saying this is an absolute tragedy. There's still, I think, six people missing, presumed dead. However, I'm going to park that. It's horrendous what's happened. But I'm going to park that and talk about kind of the business and logistical implications, because I think often when we see these things in the news, that kind of gets overlooked. Mm-hmm. And obviously there are very wide-reaching kind of effects of this incident. Mm-hmm. Not least, obviously, for the company involved with the boat they belong to. It sounds like they lost power, put out a distress signal, and then by that point were going too quick to affect the path of the ship and things. So there's obviously going to be a fairly thorough investigation into that, and obviously someone at some point will be held responsible, and that's really bad for whatever company is involved, as obviously as well as the person involved. But yeah, I think there's some fairly large kind of potential economic repercussions of this kind of catastrophe. So the Port of Baltimore itself was up until yesterday second biggest gateway for coal exports in the US, but it's also kind of a really busy port in terms of automotive industry, light trucks, and also heavy farm and construction machinery. So as well as that, the kind of general area around the port in Baltimore has got a massive industrial center. It's got a big logistics park called Trade Point Atlantic. And the sort of companies that are tenants within that park are people like Amazon, Under Armour, FedEx, UPS. So obviously take Under Armour out of that. The other three, massive logistical operations, Under Armour obviously will do as well, but worldwide shipping is quite kind of what those three companies do. So obviously losing this kind of corridor out of Baltimore is massive for all of those companies involved. So I think there's that knock-on effect in terms of, well, what do we do now? And obviously, they're going to have to reroute a lot of things. So it's obviously really bad for these companies and the coal exports and everything. They can't get through this area while it's investigated, cleared up. I mean, I imagine the clear up on the size of bridge that's now currently underwater is going to be huge. And then you've got the other kind of side of it, which I guess is anyone that does logistics and shipping and things, but not by sea, could really benefit out of this in a weird sort of way. And obviously no one wants to benefit out of a human tragedy, but anyone that ships by road or by train or by plane could do quite well out of this, because these companies still need to move their products and they can't go by their usual route. So these companies, A, are probably going to get short notice, lots of work, and B, can probably name their price because the stuff needs to move. So, like I said, obviously it's a tragic loss of life, but there are those kind of knock-on effects for various industries. Some people obviously could do quite well out of it if they can name their price to ship this stuff another way, and some people are obviously going to do really badly out of it. And it's just, I think, really interesting to look at that aspect, as well as obviously the aspect that will be quite rightly reported mainly in the news. So, yeah, what's your take on this one?
like you say, the, you know, the human aspects is tragedy. I mean, I think these people that died were filling potholes, I believe, on the bridge. So, I mean, how awful is that? You know, you're waking up one day thinking, right, going out repairing a load of potholes, and then that goes and happens. So, you know, it is, again, I can't emphasize enough the tragedy of it. I would also suggest that there must be some serious deficiencies in terms of the procedures whoever was piloting the ship was, you know, what were they doing, why did this happen? Because you would imagine that, or you'd hope that this isn't, you know, just one bloke standing by, or you know, not necessarily a bloke standing behind the wheel of this thing, looking out to sea and thinking, oh, I wonder whether we can get under that bridge. You know, it's not like that. They must have loads and loads of you know, gadgets and things like that that will tell them what they're doing, and presumably that is what led to them doing a sort of whatever Mayday call or whatever it is, and to get to do the best they could to get people off there. But I wonder, so it may be it's just to do with that ship. It's just to do with the individual, right? And in which case it is relatively self-contained, apart from what will be potentially the mother of all insurance claims, because Biden has been very quick on this and said that, you know, they'll immediately start to, you know, rebuild the bridge and everything. So I presume that what he means is they'll get started on the, you know, on the clear up investigation ASAP, and then they'll have to think later about where the money comes from in terms of compensation and whatever. If, on the other hand, this is not, and this is something that actually has been an accident waiting to happen, maybe this would be good news potentially for companies that produce equipment, you know, and navigation equipment for these kinds of vessels, because maybe they will have to have more gadgets and things to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen. So there might be that, there might be a software thing, so anywhere the one that supplies that kind of software again may suddenly find themselves very much in demand. But you know, I mean, quality control seems to be an issue, maybe, you know. I mean, obviously we had the Boeing thing that has caused them no end of grief after. I mean, you know, they've had some pretty horrendous tragedies happen, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it just seems there's been something seriously wrong. The insurance claim is going to be absolutely massive. And we'll just have to see how it goes. I mean, this is bad for Maersk, for instance. You wonder whether, I mean, they are going to, presumably Maersk is going to want to blame this on the individual. Everyone else is going to want to blame Maersk, because Maersk is a massive company, and presumably that the perception is that they've got the money to compensate people. But then this is going to become a huge, hugely complicated mess to untangle. But hopefully they don't drag their feet in terms of, you know, doing the right thing. So, you know, we'll see.
Thing, isn't it? It's one of those things that could very quickly in the next couple of days, like I say, become a blame game with like the company trying to blame the individual, everyone else trying to blame the company. I've kind of got the live updates running on my laptop in the background as we're talking, and they're talking about the fact there was a distress call and they lost power, they couldn't change course in time. But the most recent speculation is there might be some dirty fuel involved, which caused the loss of power. It's going to be one of those things where there's going to be a lot of, well, actually, they're at fault because of this, and they're at fault because of this. And is that it could potentially get a little bit ugly over the next couple of days as people try to blame each other. But reality is that obviously safety in some way or another needs improving. And actually that is an opportunity for the companies that make those systems, I guess.
Yeah.
Which again, it's not nice to think about people get profiting as a result of something like a human tragedy, but unfortunately, with a lot of industries, safety gets improved when an incident happens, not proactively.
Yeah.
And obviously there is a safety issue here that obviously needs addressing. So
yeah,
there will be a lot of business transactions and insurance claims and all sorts as a result of that, which means income for quite a lot of companies, lawyers as well, I'd imagine.
The other thing potentially is higher premiums. You know, because then they spread that, because that generally tends to happen. You get an incident, a big incident happens, it costs a lot of money, and then after that, premiums go up across the board.
Yeah.
Because that's how they, you know, often go about getting their money back. So, okay.
Like I say, should we move on from the slightly somber tone, and why don't you tell us about your favorite story in today's Watson's
Daily? So there was some news that this was in the Financial Times, so that the regulator, UK regulator, the FCA, announced new guidance yesterday for social influencers promoting financial products or services without approval or authorization. Now this is great, right? I think this is a really, really good. It's long overdue. And apparently if they break these rules, they could be, committing a criminal offence and could go to jail for up to 2 years, or they could pay an unlimited fine, or both. Now, this, like I say, I believe is way, way overdue. So there was a stat in there that said 62% of 18 to 29-year-olds follow social media financial influencers. This suggests that it is highly important for this phenomenon to become very properly regulated. I mean, the fact that you have people taking Kardashians American football players seriously in terms of advice, in terms of where they should put their money with various financial products, is, I feel, incredible. But it does seem to be a characteristic of our times. And the thing is, you can't just think, only stupid people will do it. We'll just let them, natural selection, and that'll sort them out. You can't do that. You know, you have to do something to help people to protect themselves. And I think that regulation is definitely the way forward. The thing is, there are some financial influencers, finfluencers, who are well-intentioned. You know, it comes from a good place and they want to help people. They just happen to not have any qualifications.
It can come from the best possible place, but it could still be awful advice.
Yeah. And then there are your Love Island people who get approached by companies to sell products because they have a big social media following. But so they know nothing and yet people still follow them, right? So I think this is really good that they do this. I think it would be even better. This sounds very aggressive, but I think it'd be great if at least one who's a high profile influencer does get put in prison, because that really will put the frighteners on everyone else. And shock people to do the right thing. I mean, this in itself, you would have thought, is going to shock people to do the right thing. But to actually see a finfluencer chucked in jail and having to pay a multi-million pound fine, for instance, would be pretty good in terms of, showing you that the FCA means business.
Well, I think you're right. I think any kind of you know, new legislation or any new regulation has a lot more weight if it has a high profile scalp to go with it. You know what I mean? And that would also open some really interesting doors if someone had been sponsored by a company to promote them in financial advice terms, who then pays that fine. I think that'd also be a really interesting, legally, a really interesting thing to play out as well. Like you said, you almost need someone to get caught, to get in a lot of trouble for it, and really, really scare people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that anyway, so I think this is a good thing. This is a good move forward. And I would just say, as an aside on this, you know, I feel quite strongly about this whole influencers thing. I do feel that, you know, that I understand why people will look to influencers to help them with their finances or to buy financial products. I can see it because, you know, it's easy, it's approachable. You can understand it, you know, it's not stuffy. But the problem is, I would say to anyone that listens to this podcast that there is a huge lesson here, right? In the sense that don't listen to people, don't assume that people who are good at communicating something are the best at something or know what they're talking about. You know, and I've seen this before. You know, I've worked in many different companies in my career, you know, and I've worked one, but just to home in on something. So I've worked at, say, a Japanese companies, British companies. And let's say the British company comes along and you know, wants to do a project for a Japanese company. And the Japanese company has a liaison person who speaks good English, right?
Yeah.
By and large, what ends up happening is that the British company assumes that that person that speaks English is really intelligent and knows what's going on, right? It is very tempting to think that. However, in my personal experience, it is often not the case. What is often the case is that person is good at speaking English, but that's what they're good at. Whereas quite often, the people that really know what they're talking about don't speak English because they're concentrating on being the expert in that particular field, and they don't have time to learn how to speak English. So by the same kind of thing here, you may well see people who, I mean, I'm not going to name anyone here, but I've seen plenty of influencers on, let's say, Instagram, who have massive followings. They sound great. You know, they give what sounds like, you know, solid advice. But then what I always do is I look on their LinkedIn and I think, okay, do they have any qualifications? And I am, unfortunately, I would say in virtually all those cases, they have nothing, right? Mm. And they have nothing. And the problem is, we're not talking about, you know, people advising you on what, I don't know, what Easter egg to buy or something like that. You know, they're advising on something that is potentially life changing.
Yeah.
And so I think that it is very important to make sure that you get advice from people that actually know what they're talking about. So, I mean, I'll just hark back to, for instance, I'm not saying this to try and get in my Mrs. Good books, right? But my, you know, we did a podcast with my wife quite a while ago now about finances. Now, I wanted to do that because I know that people, this is something that people, you know, need, you know, they want and they need. And I know that she knows what she's talking about. You know, she's got qualifications like you wouldn't believe. And she works incredibly hard with those qualifications, and she does this stuff for a living all the time, right? So so I was very pleased to have her do this. And, you know, I think that the problem is that, you know, you get other people who do it, and they come from a very, well, like I say, they're well-intentioned, but they don't have this qualification. Now, they will probably, those influencers will say, I don't need a qualification to give good general advice. And yes, I agree with that to an extent. But the problem is like I say, is if you're influencing people's financial lives, I think it's only fair that you should know what you're talking about. And one way of measuring that is having some kind of qualifications, because these qualifications are not easy to get. So, a bit of a rant there, but you know, what do you think?
I totally agree, because like you said, this advice is potentially life changing, either in a good way or a bad way. Either way, but it can obviously massively impact your life, what you do with your finances. And I think the fact that you said 62% of people between the ages of 18 and 29 follow social media finfluencers tells you that a very large percentage of people in that age bracket are really conscious of that. And the reason I think this is potentially very dangerous if unregulated is that actually that's the same demographic of people that there's a huge amount of rhetoric both on social media and in traditional media that says how that generation particularly are going to really struggle financially, whether it's getting on the property ladder because that's more difficult than it's ever been, whether it's working later without as good a pension, whether it, you know what I mean, we have so much coverage of why people in that age bracket may potentially either now or in the future struggle financially. Obviously we've got a cost of living crisis going on, which kind of I think adds to that. So people in that age bracket are obviously seeing all this, either, like I said, either on social media or in actually mainstream news channels report on it fairly regularly, feeling that added pressure and going, well, I obviously need to do something about this. And then they see these people that, like you say, they are well known, they are figureheads for something, wherever they've come from, whether it be a celebrity that's a sports person who obviously has a lot of money, so you could also, you could infer from that they know what they're doing with their money because they have a lot of it, or like I said, someone off a reality TV show or something like that, who actually you've had good advice in other areas, whether it be, I don't know why I'm picking this one, skincare routine, or you know, you follow some of their workouts and actually they seem to work for you and they've got that blue tick on the thing that seems means they're verified, and all of that kind of implies, I think, trustworthiness. And you know you've got this pressure to do something with your finances because otherwise you're going to be really struggling by the time you retire, or you may have to work till you're 75. Or I think it just makes that demographic of people so much more susceptible to following advice, whether it be good or bad. And like I said, unregulated, that is dangerous. Because like I said, none of these influencers are doing this, I hope, from a bad place. They're not trying to give bad advice or potentially set their followers up for a fall. But I think it's a really dangerous mixture of like I said, unregulated advice, potentially bad advice, and people that are crying out to improve their finances because they're being told left, right, and centre that it's going to be difficult for them. So, like I said, I agree with you that unregulated, that is a really dangerous mixture. So I think this regulation is such a good thing.
Yeah, I absolutely. So, I mean, I think that's, we'll see whether anyone does, you know, Made in Chelsea or Love Island or something gets slammed, put in the slammer for a few years. I'll be interesting to see. I imagine they won't, but you know, you never know, do you? And I would also suggest definitely people stay clear of anyone who's in a video that is often crouching in front of like a Lamborghini or something, saying
flashing their Rolex,
and saying, actually, here are some easy ways to make money like me, that sort of thing. Don't go for it
because advertising their Telegram group that's called Millionaire Mindset or something.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly. So yeah, whatever you do, don't fall for it. Thank you very much indeed, Duncan, as always.
Thanks for having me. I'm going to retreat back into my cave.
Brilliant. good. So sort of Gollum-like.
Absolutely. Your... yeah.
And also thank you very much, of course, to listeners for listening to this podcast and supporting it. Thank you very much indeed. Have a great day, whatever you're doing, and we'll be back again soon. Many thanks.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Bye.